burnout in our industry is very real. You know, I don't have to have been in coffee 20 years to understand burnout. Like, I've managed volunteers for 12, 14 years. Like, I know what burnout looks like. You know? And so to be able to see that degree of passion and really and rooted in something as simple as I want to give my best. That's beautiful.
Like, yeah.
Back at Latinx Nation. I'm your host, Sal, along with my amazing co-host. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Carla.
Melanie. Hi.
I hope you guys are having an amazing week, and I appreciate you guys signing on. With everything that's going on, I understand that times are stressful, but I appreciate that you're taking your time to spend it with us. So we have a great episode for you guys, but first off, we have some shout-outs. If you can go ahead and start with your shout-outs,
yeah.
Carla.
So first shout-out, I posted it on our story, so I'm trying to do something like instead of Throwback Thursdays, just kind of name it Recuérdame Thursdays. And it's the first one. I just want to be able to like recognize what everybody's up to right now. You know, the people we've interviewed, the people that we hope to interview in the future, the people that we've just encountered throughout our daily lives. Mm-hmm. I think I just want to be able to recognize them on Thursdays. And so our first Thursday today was Lanisa from Barista LA, Barista Life LA. She is amazing. We've had her on the podcast before. She's going.
Yeah.
She's making things happen and being an inspiration in the coffee industry. And once again, we posted her on our story. So if you guys ever, you know, want to look into her story, into her page, just follow that link.
Yep.
And go from there. Second one, I also posted on the story this afternoon. It is Michelle Johnson. She's doing great things again in the coffee industry. She just got put onto an article through, I think it was Travel Norn? I think that's what it's called. Mispronounced that terribly. But she's the first Black woman to ever compete at the U.S. Barista Championship. And I mean, even before that, I've met her, and she's just such an inspirational, like, human being and very, like, passionate about the art and the craft behind coffee all around, whether it's cupping, being a barista, mm-hmm. Cafe manager. And so definitely a shout out for Michelle. That's another one. And my last shout out is Joe. Let's see his last name. His last name is Lemble. I probably mispronounced his last name too. But Joe is one of my favorite regulars at Rose Park Roasters. He has been such a positive person to like see every day when he comes in and gets his cold brew. And I just want to get a shout out to him. He works in the entertainment business, doing retails. And obviously through this time of crisis, there's, you know, the entertainment business is kind of on pause.
Right.
And so he is kind of on pause during work time in a sense. And he's doing photography. He's trying to sell it on like Etsy. He's trying to sell it on Instagram. And so if you guys can follow him, give him a like on his pictures, see which ones you like. I just bought some from, well, okay, I tried buying some from him, but he didn't want to. He donated them to me. So I'm still going to buy some more from him. But they're amazing. They're from the Korean Friendship Bell, and that's like my place of peace, right?
Yeah.
So definitely he takes some great photography. But other than that, those are some great entrepreneurs that I just want to shout out personally. So
yeah, and then I have one more. I just found out about this recently, where it's the Long Beach Bread Lab. They're a local, shop here that they sell coffee and pastries. They have a kiosk in front of Long Beach Memorial Hospital. And it is, personally, I believe that it's a great spot for just vendors and stuff like that. But they have a really big spot in the front where they have this program where it's called Pay It Forward, where you can go on their website and you can buy a healthcare professional a coffee, a pastry, or any, or like coffee, pastry, and even merch, I think. No, not merch. Coffee and pastries. Let's keep it that.
Yeah.
And so what they do is that when a healthcare professional goes and they buy a cup of coffee, it's covered. Like they get that order, and then now they say that, all right, this money is already covered for that person, or the same thing with the pastry. So you can, it's almost like a donation, but you're buying it for a healthcare professional.
I wonder what coffee they're using.
I wonder.
That's just me being a nerd.
Yeah. So definitely check out their kiosk if you're around that area, or if not, just stay home and buy it online, and that way you have a way to donate to at least something that we can help out the healthcare professionals.
Yeah, for sure. The first responding, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's it for all the shout outs, I believe. So moving on to our episode, I'm super excited to finally get this man on the episode. We've only literally met like once, but I know we've had like a really good conversation in the first time we met. And all I hear is good things from like Matt and like Alvaro and people in Long Beach in the coffee industry, like, oh, Chuck's doing this, Chuck's doing that. So that leads me to our guest, which is Chuck from Good People Coffee. Chuck, say hi.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you so much for having me.
For sure. So introduce yourself. Tell us where you're from, what you do, and how COVID-19 is treating you.
I'm born in L.A., born at more exact, or Angelino's USC Medical Center. From there, grew up more in the Inland Empire, later years, and then made my way back to L.A., through design for a while. That was actually my first career. And then about 2015 now, I decided that I was pretty much done with my industry. And I just love coffee. I enjoyed making it. I played with it as much as I could at home. I had pour overs, little home roaster and stuff like that. And there's several shifts in my life on a personal level that really, it was just kind of like, you know, when things kind of line up, you're like, yeah, you know what, let's just do it. And so I quit my job and I took a minimum wage job just making coffee at this little juice and healthy food joint in Claremont. and then from there, just if I wasn't working on bar, I was at home cupping, geeking, roasting on a little Bmore, trying to get as informed as possible. And then from there, moved to LA. I started managing coffee, then had the opportunity of working at some pretty cool coffee bars here in LA, Minotti's. I served as a director of education at Bar 9 for a while. And then from there, I think I learned enough from enough places where I was fairly certain I knew what I wanted to do for my own cafe. And then from there, in late 2017, Jen and I found this really great location. It was near where we lived, and it made sense. And so we put a bid on it. It was already a coffee house, and we bought it. And from there, just little by little, has been transforming it and turning it into what we had envisioned for it. And, thankfully it has. You know, it's really turned into that. Despite COVID and what's going on now, like we were talking about earlier, we're good as a business, and I feel like we've prepared for things like this. Meaning, we, even though we opened as a coffee shop, our goal was always to end up roasting, and we took about 8 months to transition into that after we opened. So by like the end of the first year, we were already buying our own green and our roasters were roasting it for us. And then by year two, in the beginning, we were already at Origin, working on deals to be able to buy direct. And by the beginning of the second quarter last year, we had already started roasting. So we kind of already preemptively prepared for some stuff like this, simultaneously saving for a remodel, which we wanted to create this, like, I always call it like this efficiently sexy Chipotle, which is like, you know, you go to Chipotle, you look at the menu, you talk to the first person, they're working on your order, they're making sure it's perfect, it's done, and then you pay. Like it's such a phenomenal system. And so we wanted to recreate that in coffee, in a berry. Let's make sure we get it right. Let's make sure the interaction is there. Let's make sure that the hospitality is there so that then from the end, when you pay, it's a full experience and then you're ready to go. So thankfully, that's always been our model. Like our like we, as a coffee shop, our model is like, it's like a bar experience. You know, you put your drink order first, you get your drink, and then you pay. You know, I always, when we have new baristas, I tell them, like, it's like buying drugs in the street, you know, it's paper and then product. It's never paper before product, you know, and so you got to make sure you do that handoff. But it, because it creates an experience. And so,
yeah.
Thankfully, despite the world we live in where you can't sit in and have your for here experience, you can still have a craft hospitality experience.
Right.
And so we kind of set ourselves up for that already because our shop is only 300 square feet. There's only so much you can do with that. But even at 300 square feet, before COVID, our peak hours were like $400, $500 hours. And
wow.
Now, you know, we're looking at, with COVID, peak hours of like 350. We haven't hit 4 yet, but we're seeing a different pattern where people come in later or just buying a lot more retail. And so now you get these spread outs throughout the day where it's like, oh, like, yeah, numbers wise, we're still doing just as good. And so it's good because we've always thought, think small, think efficient. We're coffee, we're not booze, we're not high end fine dining, you know. So it's like, you know, there's a margin that you have at your square footage per transaction. And so our goal was always to kind of really stay small. In fact, I think that the first idea for the like corporation was going to say keep it 300, which is like nothing over 300 square feet.
Yeah.
Know? Just keep it tight, keep it small, keep it efficient.
Yeah.
And I think that's all that to just kind of wrap up and kind of just saying, I think from drinking coffee for so many years, having been able to experience coffee in different countries, service in different countries, being a fan, a big, big fan of specialty coffee, from the consumer perspective, like I always saw so many things that were right, but also so many things that could be improved on.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I mean, you know, good luck walking into a shop and offering your 2 cents, you know,
like, oh, yeah.
Sending that an email to an owner and telling him how he should bring it, you know, And then good luck, you know, working at a coffee shop and having all these ideas only to be turned down by everyone who's worked eons longer than you have, you know? And so, you know, it really, it kind of came down to intentionally spending 3-4 years and working at the right places, connecting and learning as much as I could and really just being a student of the sport and being a student of the craft. Not necessarily from the palate side and the appreciation side, because that was very much there. But it was more of the business, the functional, the administrative, the logistics side of it. So thankfully, between that and having a really good crew, you know, I mean, they're good people. Like that's where the title comes from. It's not me. Like that word "people" is plural. You know, it means it implies a team. You know, and then it's I always love being able to say like when people are like, "Oh, who's at the bar? Who's on bar? Good people are on bar." That I think kind of like having that mentality and mindset 2 years ago, I think prepared us for something.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're grateful, you know, because we have a community that respects and loves what we do. We're seeing a love and a respect and an admiration for coffee that I think any specialty coffee or barista seeks, you know, not necessarily personal attention or but rather a common appreciation, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you respect what I do, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I'm not your Starbucks or I'm not your quick fix, you know. I'm not your grab and go, you know. And hey, I respect you got a busy day. You got, you know, you got $1 million deals to make. But you know, this is also a very special $4 cappuccino that I want to make.
Definitely.
You know? So we're really seeing a return of that. You know, which is great. Like, kind of things what we wanted. You know? So it's treated as well aside from a wearing face mask that is super.
I definitely agree. I definitely agree. So what?
It's chilling my posture.
So your shop is located in what area of LA?
The area is called West LA, and then more particular, the neighborhood is Sawtelle. Sawtelle is a small neighborhood just east of Santa Monica, but before the 405. What's in the vicinity of us? We have UCLA about a mile away from us. Mm-hmm. Brentwood about a mile away. West Swoopwood about a mile away. And Santa Monica about a half mile away.
Okay. Dwayne used to work around there. So
did?
Like the little that I did drive around that area, it looked really busy. So yeah, I can only imagine.
It's cute. It's weird because it's not super upscale like Santa Monica. Like you can drive down Santa Monica Boulevard and you can totally tell where the city of Santa Monica begins and ends. Okay. Like, it's like that much. It's like you're going to Long Beach and all of a sudden you're in Wilmington. You're like, oh yeah, I'm in a different
neighborhood. Yeah, this is a different neighborhood now.
It kind of feels like that, you know. Yeah. But it's cool because like Sawtelle is filled with tons of mom and pop shops, but it's not like your eclectic Silver Lake Highland Park mom and shop. It's real like mom and pop. It's just like,
oh, okay.
It's a Japanese restaurant. It's Japanese mom, Japanese dad, and Japanese kid.
Yeah.
if it's Thai, it's Thai people in there. You know, if it's the Oaxacan restaurant, everybody's from Oaxaca. You know,
yeah.
It's that kind of like mom and pop.
Oh, cool.
So, like,
cool.
It's cool. It's like we love it. Like, cause it's. We get to be a little bit of the diamond in the rough too, you know. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate it.
That's awesome.
That's a great name.
So, what inspired you to name it what it's named?
Good people. That was Jenna's idea. Jenna's my wife. I couldn't come up with a name. Ironically enough, people are like, "Dude, you should just call it Chucks." Like, it's classic. It's iconic. No one needs to know it's actually you. It just has like. And I thought about it, but it felt very narcissist. And then when Jen and I were talking about like what roasters we were going to work with, what who we were going to bring on for this for that, I had already developed a series of friends and partners and people that I wanted to partner with, and then how I had envisioned our coffee program and all that to be. And so every time I would recommend such and so, like, oh, they're good people, like, we're gonna work with such and so, they're good people. And I think that stems actually more from the Latin side, which is, it's funny, my wife is Korean, raised in Ohio.
Okay.
Very different than me, so she has highlighted how ESL I am. I didn't realize that until talking more with her. And for me to say good people is really me to say buena gente. Uh-huh. When I say fulano es buena gente.
Yeah.
Mira, te voy a recomendar esta persona que te va a ayudar, es buena gente. Mm-hmm. And that is for us in Latin culture a way that we give a personal recommendation of someone. You know?
Yeah.
Because you can know someone, but then to go to the extent of saying other good people, then you vouch for them.
Yeah, that means
so
a lot. Yeah.
It kind of stemmed actually from that, from the repetitive of like who we're going to work with. And she's like, babe, we should just call the shop good people. Like, and it's like, it's such a fun name that we can have fun with the brand.
Yeah.
And I was like, it really like, oh my God, you're absolutely right. I didn't even think of that. And so we have. So we named it that, and it's been fun, like playing with the brand, playing with the logos, playing with the identity of it. Because it's been fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's your print, you know? It's what you're leaving imprinted. It's your legacy in a sense, right? That you're leaving here on the coffee industry and the world and in general. So I think that's cool. That's a really cool like reason why naming it good people.
It's a great story. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's relatable.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to start a coffee shop. It's going to be named Buena Gente.
we just finished a mural in the back of our shop in the patio area. Unfortunately, it's not open to the public yet, which is kind of a bummer.
Mm.
But our illustrator, she did this really beautiful mural of a truck filled with coffee bags pulling into the shop. And then the girls that run the farms that we buy from, Cresco's ran by three sisters. And so these gals are brilliant. Like they're fifth generation farmers, and they are the third wave answer out in origin for the culture there.
Wow.
And so she's got a beautiful doodle of them, and the phrase on top says, "Todos somos buena gente."
I like that.
We all are, man. Like we all make mistakes, but you know, we don't start with other people. You know, you know, people meet well.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's even that reminder for us, but like always try to see that. You know, even if someone treats you like a jerk in the bar, it's like, man, they probably just got some bad news. You know? They probably just got a bad email. You know. you never know. Don't take this personal.
Especially in times like
these. Shrug it off.
Yeah.
It
is No, definitely. I definitely agree. So you were talking about the three girls, right? They're fifth mm-hmm. generation. Where are they from?
They're in Colombia, in the city of Salgar. It's Juliana, Valentina, and Daniela. Daniela she's the main farmer and the Q grader. She's actually been to the States a few times if we posted her for events and things like that. Juliana works she's the director of operations, so she oversees the logistics side of things. And Valentina is the HR, and she gets to work with not only HR, but the staff of the farm. They own over about 9 farms, 2 specialty farms, and about 2 million trees.
Wow.
She also oversees development and education amongst the farms and making sure that the kids that live on, for the employees that live on site, that they have internet, that they have teachers coming in, that the kids don't fall behind during the high seasons in terms of education. So they've really been pushing to be in the forefront of that mm-hmm. and to try to be a role model to other farms and to be able to develop education within the communities of their own workers and no longer see themselves as just independent farms. But some of these farms are now operating really at a small corporation level. So these gals are really bringing in this insight and this technology to help farms catch up to 2020. You know?
Yeah.
Especially now that most Latin countries, I would say about 60% of them went into hard quarantines.
Yeah.
Having that kind of infrastructure now is so, so important and valuable.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's
impressive.
Yeah, is really, that you could see the connection, obviously, from, you know, the cup that you guys are making every day, you're selling every day at your coffee shop mm-hmm. to, like, the farmers themselves. And I mean, that's what Third Wave is a lot about, you know, and direct trade, mm-hmm. and that's what we're all about. But sometimes I feel like you go into these coffee shops and we tend to lose the track of, like, oh, we just... the aesthetic, you know, is it Instagram worthy? Is it this? And which is like, and I've said multiple times, it's fine. Yeah, it's marketable. Cool. But I definitely love to see the connection between the coffee shop owner to these farmers that, you know, don't have as many resources as we do over here, but seeing them from not having any resources to now being where they're at, like you're saying, these women are, you know, expanding in that. Little area.
They're role models. In fact, I would say our when Noah and I went out there, and our experience with her and her family was what kind of thrusted us ahead to go ahead and start roasting. We wanted to still wait a little bit more because we wanted to kind of lock in a couple things in the facility. But really seeing their passion caused us it called us up. If that makes sense, you know, like it didn't scare us. We're like, oh no, cool. Like they mean business. Like, yeah, let's put on a big boy shoes and let's do this.
Right.
And seeing that, it was a very, era como un reto.
Yeah, challenge.
You know?
Yeah.
And I remember like the first 2 months, it was very rough. And Noah and I would just have to be reminding ourselves, like, hey, you remember Joanna that works in the nursery? Yeah, dude, let's work hard. You know, do you remember such and so? Because we saw such intention, not only from the girls that run the farm, but also from each and every one of the members on their team. Like the level of passion from the woman that was running the nursery, from the guy that runs their specialty farms. Like everybody has this deep sense of responsibility and ownership of their step, that it was like it really created, like, it reinvigorated passion, because you can burn out in this industry, you know.
Oh yeah.
You can come in bright eyed, bushy tail, you know, we jokingly call it baby barista Yoda coming in, you know, you're expecting that everybody, you know, cares as much as you do. And burnout in our industry is very real. You know, I don't have to have been in coffee 20 years to understand burnout. Like, I've managed volunteers for 12, 14 years. Like, I know what burnout looks like. You know?
Yeah.
To be able to see that degree of passion and really, and rooted in something as simple as, I want to give my best. that's beautiful.
Like, yeah, definitely. That,
like, nothing can stand in your way of you today giving your best.
Yeah.
Only you.
Yeah.
Only you. And, you know, and so I love that because it really stems from a sense of excellence and not from, like, this kind of frustrating pursuit of perfection where you're only mm-hmm. happy if it's 100. And you're not going to hit hundreds. You're just not, like,
yeah.
you know, if you're lucky, you're going to dance in the 80s and low 90s, you know? So, like, learn yeah. to strive for that, you know? Learn to aim for those things. And so yeah. really seeing that their work ethic and their passion stems from that, it felt good, you know, to partner with folks that sincere, you know? And we have a very a special relationship with them. I mean, mm-hmm. to the point that we get our coffees, like, dropped off and, like, in their, like, they have an importer here in the States, and he personally comes and fills up his Suburban and just drops off coffee bags for us. Like,
nice.
Thank you. Like, it's that easy. And so,
yeah.
It's a beautiful, deep-rooted relationship under this appreciation, you know, that this is how we're actually going to make our industry forward, you know, by doing the best we can with every coffee, not just the beautiful ones, the elegant ones, the Ethiopians, or the 90 plus coffees, but really yeah. like, hey, I got this 82. How can I make this taste like chocolate and butterscotch? So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really, really exciting. And you're roasting the coffee yourself, or do you have somebody in particular that roasts for you guys?
No, Noah's actually our production roaster. Okay. He's more production roaster and roast master right now. We're training. We're rotating amongst the team to see who's got the nose and the knack for roasting. I take care of all the green purchases and do all the sample roasting.
Okay.
So for example, like, as roasters, the first thing that we acquired was an Akala to sample roast everything, because yeah. again, we don't have a lot of money to play with, so we got to make sure that what we buy is good and make smart purchase options. And so so that's where I come in and just make sure that and together, Noah and I contour profiles, knowing what we like and what our community likes, which is really, if I'm honest with you, what even taking a step back, why he even started working at Good People. He left a pretty good position to come here was because we have a very similar perspective, game okay. plan, and goal
okay. for
a coffee program. So, like he's like my coffee wife. Like, I'm his coffee wife. Like, we just get it, you know. And not only, and it's crazy, like, how much we get it on different levels too. Mm-hmm. Where, like, and there's a gap of like 20 years from him and I. Like, I'm 40, he's 22. So we jokingly say, like, I think he feels that kid hole size that I don't have any kids. So, like, and then, you know, he needed a dad. And so this works out great. Like, we got a father-son relationship. But, you know, he's a super bright kid. And I think that a couple of things, I think he needed a platform where someone trusted him
uh-huh.
and let him be what he can do and who he can be. And then I believe in young people. I really do. Like, I yeah. believe in the energy and the creativity that young people can bring to the table.
Yeah.
And very few folks in my position with my resources do that, you know, because they're afraid, you know, they're afraid of failure. But once you know that we are going to fail, it's more about what are we going to learn from that and get right back up? You know, when you think like that, then it's yeah. like, it's cool, man. It is what it's going to be. And so it allows me the freedom to, I mean, we're still in the roastery together. Like, if anything, once we're at the roastery, I become more of his assistant. I'm bagging copies. I'm, like, right. sealing bags. I'm, like, double-checking orders. All right, I'll schedule the deliveries. But we're very much a team in that, because I think if he tried to do it by himself or if I tried to do it by myself, it would be too much, you know? And,
yeah.
I mean, even in this last month, we saw an increase of coffee bag sales of 400%. And
wow.
We were able to execute without any, like, no hiccups, which is, like, the type of, like, workflow we already had prepared us for this, you know?
Nice.
So it's good. Like, we have a system, and it works for us, you know?
Yeah.
And we're just hoping that we can continue to make opportunities for our team if they feel like the roasteries for them and stuff like that, then fantastic. Let's break up your week a little bit so that, you know, you're not feeling like you're just working, you know, the coffee bar 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So I mean, as long as I think if business owners would be more willing to kind of like trust the young people, you know, then I think you could really see some creative stuff happen at your shop. But I think that sometimes people forget that all of that still requires supervision. You know, so you still need to be there. You know, just because you hired a couple of young people doesn't mean you're going to chill at home and just play Xbox. You got to be there. You know, you just don't have to be the one doing all the heavy lifting, but you still have to be there sweating it out with the crew and making sure that things are constantly being modified and worked on so that everybody has a good work experience.
Yeah.
So, and I think because I'm very hands-on, in all the operations I feel like I have a very progressive mindset, you know, because I didn't spend 10 years, you know, like I didn't tell you you're a stump town or, you know, name roaster here. So I don't have like those like old concepts and theories in my head. No, like if anything, I come from a background of music, production and from design where I'm all about teamwork. I'm all about, you know, creative input. I'm all about, you know, delegating, giving everybody a little piece of something so that together we create a whole. Right. And so, and I think that sometimes in the coffee industry, there's not a lot of that. There's a lot of ownership and there's a lot of food and beverage experience. And then this very interesting third wave coffee experience, which sometimes doesn't really translate to food and beverage. And then sometimes can be detrimental to even a business growing, you know?
Yeah.
Because sometimes those types of mindsets would have said like, no, we shouldn't do Postmates. That kills the specialty coffee experience. And right now every coffee shop's like, yo, we need some Postmates. You know? And those types of mindsets can be detrimental to a business. You know, you can't really explain that to the perfect person that's pouring the perfect latte art, but it's like, but I almost want to tell them like, yeah, I've worked other industries. I'm telling you, like, this is very short-sighted. Like, you've got to think big picture. And I think, thankfully, like, our team does think big picture. So even morphing into this new normal has been like, yeah, no problem. Like, yeah, we've been on Grubhub for 2 years. Like we got on that quick because we knew. Like, we used to say it to ourselves. We used to say that on a rainy day, we owe it to you to give you that latte that you fell in love with, you know? And so let's go ahead and send it on Grubhub. So like we've always like thought like ahead, even though they're not popular.
Yeah.
But like, yo, like your opinion doesn't pay my bills.
Yeah. I think it's, and this goes for like anything. I mean, even beyond the coffee industry, I think just having such an open mind and willing to at least try to understand the other side of the picture, you know, it takes you so much further in life and so many things, you know. I always like to use the example when I went to Belize, right? Mm. I went with such like an open mind because I was like, I don't know what to expect. You know, I'm used to just going to Guatemala for 2 months or for a month and hang out there with my dad and travel and be in paradise. And then going to Belize with an open mind and hearing like so much of the culture, seeing so much of the culture, experiencing so much of it. It is like one of my favorite trips by far. And I just went for like 5 days, like, like, you know, just, and it's just like overall just being open-minded. And I feel like in the coffee industry, I feel like there's so many people that have so many ideas. And I mean, it's an evolving industry. It's such a baby still. I still consider it such a baby, especially in third wave, that there's so many ideas, there's so many creativity coming into it. And if you're not willing to be an open-minded vessel towards that, I feel like you'll run into brick walls here and there. You'll
be left behind.
You know, yeah, you'll be left behind. You'll be running into brick walls. You'll be like, yeah, like you were saying earlier, you know, kind of feeling overworked, feeling in a sense where it's like, I can't do this. Like, I mean, coming from being a barista to being a cafe manager now, I've been running into brick walls, like, man, I'm overworked. I'm over it. Man, I'm overworked. I'm over it. But that sense of taking a step back and be like, you know, I'm going to be open-minded about it. And it takes you back to that first love of your coffee, you know, like, all right, you take that sip of the coffee and you're like, okay, no,
Yeah.
I'm in this for the long haul, you know. I'm in it for the farmers. I'm in it for the baristas and the cafe shop owners, you know. Mm. And so it's definitely having an open perspective, I think, is something everybody needs in life, to be honest. I mean, it's, I don't know how you can't.
Right. And being successful, from what I've experienced and what mentors that I've looked up to, it's all about adaptability and preparedness for whatever's to come. Like with this whole pandemic, no one expected this in 2020. This just like how people weren't expecting Postmates or Uber like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Everything, it changes all the time. And like you have a perspective that I really, really enjoy and I like seeing in people, because it just shows how adaptable people are. And that with the right team and the right vision that you have to work together, not just, oh, we're going to make a quick buck and that's going to set us up for life. No, it's like it's constantly adapting towards what the climate has. I think that's really awesome. And that's a hell of a good way to just keep yourself together, you know? Yeah. You guys have, it seems that you and your team are very tight-knit and very oriented and helping each other out. So that's really good. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I was, as you guys are saying that, I realized that, like, I think that the factor that makes us flexible and adaptable, I think it's a cultural thing. Our team is predominantly Latin. Like, we jokingly know, because he's half white, half Nicaraguan mixed with I forgot something else. But we were doing like the percentage of like what we are, like white to non-white, and it was like we're only 6.25% white. So we're like, because it's like yo, like being brown, like you always gotta adapt. Like, I mean, I'm 40, man. I could tell you like the times I've had to adapt from like speak more proper, speak more hood, like speak more this. Like, I just experienced this just in the last few days. I was Wednesdays, my wife and I, we go down to Englewood, the Imperial Courts, and we partnered with this organization out there. It's the Watts Transformation Center. Cool. It's this beautiful rec center that our friend Justin has taken over. And through contribution, he's turned it. He's got a school in there now. He's got a kitchen. He's got an indoor court, an outdoor court. And really like the hub for Imperial Courts. I mean, that place is rough. And when I go places like there, here's a good one. You know, I serve a community that I would say is about that predominantly white. So here's what you're going to hear at the end of a transaction. Good looking out, man. You know, all right, cool, man. You go to the hood. Good looking.
Yeah.
It's a different way of saying it. Uh-huh. You're saying the same thing, different way of saying it. And as I'm knocking doors, wearing a bandana, bald head, I got to remember that I got to hood it up a little bit. And when I knock on the door, yo, we got some meals for y'all. Come open the door. Okay. You knock on the door in the hood anywhere else. So, like, you hear people like, go away. It's like, I got food for you. You got to come with that hood approach. You got to hood it up a bit. And so I think that for us, like, Hispanics in LA, like, we're always navigating that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's something that not a lot of people can relate, and it's this kind of like stressful toll that you get at, where like if you're dealing with people that have any kind of authority over you, make sure to come off super proper, hardworking, and you can listen and you'll do what you need to say. But then once you're talking to people underneath you, remember, you got to come off firm. You got to come off like, you know, doing this and this and this, and make sure you're leading by example. And these kind of like expectations that are placed over us, you know, where it's like, I don't see other people having to live up to that.
Right.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that that's kind of like one of the awesome things about we're even seeing kind of right now, that the people that are the most upset about the country shutting down because of COVID are the people that are used to business as usual and want business as usual. And don't realize that this world is ever changing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and they don't get that because, you know, they've been in this country multiple generations, you know, they and when you've been in this country for multiple generations and you've been generating that income multiple generations, you're used to a degree of comfort.
Yeah.
And when you're first or second generation in here, and, you know, you remember when mom tells you that story that when we first came here, we had a two-bedroom apartment. It was seven of us. You know, when you remember growing up, watching one uncle and his family stay in that extra room, then another uncle and his family stay in that, and you see them grow and then thrive, and then they start a business, they buy a home, all this and that, and it's like, you get accustomed to that. Yeah. You know, you get accustomed to seeing people, you know, get out of the situation that they were in, that you can't help but just think like that, you know. Yeah, I was saying on Matt's IG Live where I was saying, like, it's going to sound cold, but, you know, some shops I should have never opened aren't going to open again.
Yeah.
Because there has been an overflow of people in our industry. You know, I firmly feel like, yo, if you're not growing coffee, roasting coffee, or serving coffee, what you doing in coffee?
Exactly.
Oh, I'm an influencer. Oh, cool. Like, because 83% of the people in this world drink this already, but I guess, you know, we needed you for that other 17. You know, it's like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this industry is very small, and it's like the margins are small. Like, we don't, it's not liquor or booze, you know, we don't have those kind of margins. Like, we just have a bunch of, like, BS jobs in here to make it work for everyone.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that for me, like, mindset has always been like, hey, just get up again. You just gotta get up again.
Yeah.
You gotta get up again. You know, I'm grateful. I wish I had more of, like, maybe take some time to chill, but, you know, We're trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
When we can get out of town.
I know, right?
But, you know, but in the time being, like, I'm grateful. Like, I have friends of mine in this industry that got laid off and they're just like, they're just going stir crazy. Like, they're tired of doing the 10 push-up challenge and the first sip challenge and the last sip challenge. The 10 burpee challenge. I'm like,
yeah.
But, you know, I really think it's just in our DNA.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just in our DNA.
I agree.
You know, and no nos podemos dejar.
No.
That's it. That's it. No nos podemos dejar.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I even see it across other cultures. Like, there's just something in our DNA that just makes us a little bit.
Yeah.
And this is where I really feel that, like, as long as we stick together, you know, for me, the biggest weight I have felt, that I felt in the beginning of this entire process, and it's still there, but not as much as before, just to make sure that everyone on my team can stay employed and can stay and can keep their full time schedule. Because I know what it's like to count on your tips, to count on your wages, to make sure, like, all right, this check goes to this payment, this goes to this payment, and then if I got this tips, I'm gonna do that. And always making sure that, like, if the crew's taken care of, then we're gonna be all right.
You know? Yeah.
And I think if with more of us, you know, can take that kind of mindset, maybe even not from a work profession, but just like, oh, y'all got no food. You know, hey, you got to lose, man. You got to drop off a 12 pack. Like, you know, stuff like that, man. Like, you know, you'd be surprised. You'd just be surprised, you know. And so, and I think the more we think of other people, it'll kind of help us get out of our funk, out of our own kind of our own head. You know, it can get. I mean, it's anxious times. You know, it is definitely time to feel anxious and to feel worried and to feel despair and to feel hopelessness. You know, but, you know, I always see those, like, birds. They're just flying over my head, but I ain't going to let those take a dookie on me. No, I'm going to just keep pressing. You know, I see you, but I'm not going to stand under you. I'm going to just keep pressing forward.
For sure. No, I definitely agree that it is 100% in our DNA. I am, like, I look at my parents and coming out here and, for, like, out of nothing, you know, into this country and trying to achieve the American dream. And I put quote unquote always on the American dream because back in the day, you know, the American dream was an actual thing that people could actually say, this is what an American dream is. I feel like it's evolved so much over the years that we really can't just, like, put it in a box.
Yeah.
But, you know, my parents' American dream was generically earn money, take us pretty much where we had a roof over our head, shirt on our back, food at the table, and, you know, be successful. And that was their dream. That was their dream. And they did everything possible, is work, 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 you know, and it was one after another. And that's, you know, what I grew up knowing, like, all right, now I need to work, work, you know, I need to be successful. I need to, as well, like educating myself, you know? And so I think it's definitely, to me, coming from Utah, that's such a very conservative, not as diverse state, especially the little town I came from, coming to here, man, I lit on fire. Like, coming out here and being able to work with my Latinas and some of that are, they're like some of my best friends now in LA, because I started up working in LA, and just it sparked.
Right.
Like, I feel like there was just that immediate connection, because we didn't have to, like, we didn't have to be like, hey, you need to do this. Hey, you need to do this better. And like, no, we already knew, like, let's get it done. You know, there was just that, like, it takes two to tango, and we were just tangoing so well, like, you know, like through the whole, like, just working vibe. And so I think that's, I'm sure that's what you feel with your team, you know, with your team, they feel that trust with you, that, you know, you can connect as a Latino, a Latinx individual. And I think that's such a great feeling, like, because as much as, you know, that working vibe is in our DNA and everything, I also think it's hard for us to trust as a community, you know, because we've been so deceived. We've been so, there's been so much just,
we have a lot
colonization in our culture,
yeah,
and in our just, yeah, overall our culture. So I think being able to go into an industry and somebody feeding hope into me saying, you can do this. Like, this is possible for you. I'm like, nah, homie. I don't believe you until I see it in my hand, you know? So to, like, you know, being able, like, to have that and you connecting that with your employees, I think that's such a great thing. I think it's such a powerful tool to have. It's more powerful than money. It's more powerful than the business itself. Mm-hmm. I think that heart and that connection is such a, like, it's power, you know? Yeah.
Especially your viewpoint on failure, where you see failure not as, like, something you want to avoid, but it's inevitable. And it's something that you learn from, you know? And I feel like a lot of people miss that. And personally, I would like to say that I'm not scared of failure, but I'm sure that's not true at some point, you know, because there's things where, like, you just don't want to mess up, it's hard to accept. Like, at one point you're going to mess up, but it's, where do you go from there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you dwell on it, or do you look at what happened and do you grow from that? Which is something that, like, I'm glad that you have that. And that's something that's like, you know, that's cool that people are able to see it this way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, I served as a volunteer for almost like 10 years teaching music with in an underprivileged Hispanic community. And and one of the things that I saw in our communities is a very continual pattern where young ladies were very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes got to spend more time with their moms. Oftentimes got to learn more hands-on from their moms. Latin women are more team-oriented. Like, there's almost, I've rarely encountered bad egos amongst Latin women in my industry. Guys, this particular Latin guys, I find this, like, fear of failure.
Yeah.
I find this fear of asking for help, fear of making a mistake, of coming off as not knowing, and the common factors that I tend to see is, like, the kind of relationship you have with your dad. You know, I've had times where, like, I've had some employees and ask them, like, hey, man, how many times did your dad call you pendejo or baboso? All the time. Like, all right, I want to let you know that this isn't that space. You know, I would never call you that. I would never say that to you. But I also need you to know and to give me a chance and trust me by telling me that when something's wrong, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
I try to approach things as a problem solver, not as a problem blamer or something like that.
Yeah.
That's not going to get us anywhere. And so, In almost kind of like setting these ground rules, like, it becomes like it unravels. it unravels so many hangups that our culture feels.
Yeah.
You know, and then like our my best teams are female teams. Like I love them. Like and when I hang out with them, I feel like one of the compadres. I'm just just like, yeah. And like and as a manager, they don't realize they're spilling all the beans. I'm like, yeah, tell me what's going on. Tell me what's and they have such a beautiful, jokingly indirect way. I'm like, yeah, such and so needs to work on this. Such and so needs to work on that. Cool, man. I got employee assessments done in this last 2 hours. You know, and then and. But it's a very it's kind of like creating a system and a structure amongst our hood environment and our inclinations of being whom we are, which is you know the gals like the gossip, the guys like to pretend they know better, and so as long as we know those things early on, then you know we play to those strengths and I think that once team that it helps kind of create this family dynamic. And one of the things we've seen during the season of COVID is that like if folks aren't they're not scheduled to work that day, they just come to the shop and they just like get coffee and then our patio it used to be open to the public, now with everything going it's closed, so now it's the employee lounge, so they'll just hang out there. And it's funny because like I'll be back there, I'll be working, and then they're like, hey, dude, it's your day off, huh? Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, you're already going crazy. It's like, yeah, I just miss being here. You know, like, it's like, honestly, as a boss, I want that. That makes people, you know, clean a little better, serve a little better, take ownership so that, you know, like, they don't feel like they're serving my customers, you know, they're serving our customers, you know, and they're serving our guests, they're serving our community. And it really, I find that particularly in our culture, when you take that time to develop that, like our people gravitate to that, like 100%.
Yeah.
Like, which is probably like why we're so susceptible to gangs, so susceptible to cliques, to groups, because we want to feel a sense of belonging. You know, a lot of us, like I'm from Nicaragua. Like I didn't go to Nicaragua until like I was in my 30s. Like I didn't get to go because my parents didn't have papers, and from there was a lot of war and instability, and it just wasn't. And so we learned very early on to create family where you're at. And so I've tried this kind of like approaches with other cultures, and it doesn't quite translate.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know. It's funny. Like I've had my experiences. I'm like, huh, interesting. But, you know, and it's actually like, and at first I really wanted to be as diverse as possible, and I still, there's a lot of diversity within our team, but the more that we're in business, the more I feel comfortable really just wanting to stand out within our community as a culture, as a coffee shop that will predominantly hire Hispanics.
Yeah.
Give Latin folks the opportunities that other people don't give us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
White people don't get to say it's a white only shop. You can just tell when you go to the website and you see who's the directors and everything. You're like, oh, no, more white faces. You know, there's such a strong backing and support when a shop is black owned and all black people work there. You know, it's almost expected. You know, so why not for us?
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We're tired of just washing dishes and working the back kitchen. You know?
Yeah.
We get to be in the front of the house too.
Yeah.
Right.
We get to be the ones that get to interact with our guests. And one of the things that I appreciate that even though our community is predominantly white, they love that. They really respect our vibe, you know, like, and like everything in our brand is, it's minority owned. Like we make it a point, like you look us up on Yelp, it says minority owned. Like we own who we are,
right.
And aren't ashamed of it. And for me, as a Hispanic man born in East LA to own a business and live in West LA, like, yeah, like it ain't about neighborhoods, but yeah, there's a big difference between owning a shop, you know, on the west side and owning the shop, you know,
on the east side,
you know, in another neighborhood. So, to be able to have this business and then turn it around and just create a platform for everybody that I can that shares my skin tone.
Because,
look, nobody else ever said to me, hey, I'm going to give you a chance because you're talented, and I'm going to make sure not to give up on you because we share the same skin.
Yeah, it's
ever said that to me.
Yeah. In a sense, it's breaking those stigmas of white privilege, you know, which is like those are things, and we have to be real that it is a thing, and I always like to emphasize on that. You know, I'm not going to get the same privilege in anything, in beauty products, in education, in like any economical issue, whatever. I'm not going to get the same privilege as a Caucasian person, you know, and it's, I know it's like sad to say, you know, it's 2020 and we're still dealing with this. It's going to be very, very long time until that ever like dissolves from the way America's run. And so what you're providing is you're providing a platform for the Latinx community, which I think is, you know, something that we stand for so strongly at Latinx Nation. Like that is, you know, if we're going to raise funds, we're going to raise funds for a Latinx community, you know? And it's like, I mean, we support all cultures. Yeah, we have interviewed all types of cultures and we love it. But we definitely strongly believe in providing a platform for the people and the people of like buena gente, you know, que es también de Latinx and que sea de Central America, South America. And we just want to be that representatives to them, you know, the voice, we want to be the voice to the voiceless. In a sense. And I think that's awesome what you're doing because how many times, right, have our parents worked in the food industries and they just worked in the back?
Yeah.
You know, like I remember my first job was at Wendy's and I was so like, I was there for a month straight and I'm like, why am I not working up front? You know, they had me flipping las hamburguesas and the everything, the bacon and I was just like, God damn it, I hate this so bad. And so it's like, they always had like the blonde, blue eyed, you know, chicas up front. And I'm just all right, you know, whatever. So, and it built this like mentality. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not worthy. You know, maybe I'm not structured for that. Maybe I just need to always be in the background. I need to figure out how to do me. And growing up in that, it kind of fucks with you, you know? Very, very and much. And so that's why when I moved out here, oh my God, click, like, it, in my Latinx community, I'm like, damn, just fire, you know? And it felt like where I belong, you know? Just feels, when you meet somebody that you can relate in culture, it's like, you just know, like, that's perfect. Such a perfect connection.
You could definitely see it. Like, when you came and moved here, you could definitely see, like, you were, like, completely different. Like, you're just way more happier just being yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, like, a culture change. And it's funny that you said it's trying to transition that to, or translate that to other cultures. Like, even communicating what we're talking about to other cultures. I've had those conversations many times, and people are like, I still don't get it. Like, I don't, or simple things like, oh, I'm excited to go get an elote from the elotero man. And like, what's that? Like, that's weird. It's like, no, dude. It's like,
why are you eating corn from a bag?
Like no, dude. Or just like things like that. You know, there's, so yeah, it hits different. It hits different. So it's definitely, that's awesome that you're doing that though. I really appreciate that. Yeah. I think that's like, a resource for the coffee industry and the Latinx community in general. You know, I think about it where this industry has become so saturated in coffee shops and in roasters and in certain areas, of course, that there's not enough people doing something than just the aesthetic, you know, where it's like, oh, let's just build a coffee shop because it looks pretty, or let's build a coffee shop because it looks like this guy did it pretty easily. Like, all right, you know? And, you know, I stepped away from that a while back because I said, no, I want to be a resource to the coffee industry, you know? And like how you're doing yourself, you know, you're a coffee shop owner, but you're also being a resource to these individuals on finding their journey, their own path, which I think that's pretty cool.
And that goes with any kind of like business that you're going to own.
Yeah.
That, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a fun journey, and I think that I think the more we're honest about the times that we've felt insufficient, underqualified, we felt outside of the margin without any clear path of what to do that is right is very stressful. You know, I've shared, I'm going to share something with you guys. I've shared a few times and I really feel like this is a good platform for it. My name is Carlos. Mm-hmm. It's not my parents are like, let's call this one Chuck. Okay? And Chucky. But my mom used to always call me Chale, which is Char. When I started working in design, I would send out resumes and emails, and like callbacks were like 15%, 20%. And right around that time, like I was in a band. I was in an angry hard rock band, and there was this other guy named Carlos. And so all my friends just called me Chuck or Chucky. And so to distinguish between the other two, since especially half the time we practice it in my mom's garage. And so my mom was like, Chale, vale, esa música. And so I thought, like, you know what, man, like, what if I change my email address to Chuck Herrera? And I did. And my resume from Carlos Herrera to Chuck Herrera, and callbacks were about
7%. Wow. Yeah.
To this day, like, I still go by Chuck, and I mean, this decision was like 20 years ago. And like, it's happened. It's like, it's been so long now that it's like, I don't want to be almost that weird person at the age of 40, but like, no, I want everyone to know how to call me Carlos. My sister will call me Carlos. Like a few of my family will call me Carlos.
Yeah.
I really like that name, but the fact that I go by Chuck, despite all of my personal accomplishments in life, really speaks to how far behind we are culturally.
Yeah.
And not being able to be comfortable in our own skin and to celebrate that. And I think that it's not going to change until we change.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to do it for us. You know, one of my good friends, Mikey, he's from Miami. And have you guys had the chance to visit Miami?
No.
Yeah, want to. I recommend every person of Latin countries to visit Miami, because you will see a city that celebrates our culture, that celebrates our flavor, that celebrates, like, we're not second-class citizens there.
Yeah.
You know, we're the town.
Yeah. Yes.
And despite it all, man, like, to a certain degree, we are second-class, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just is. Like, you know, as great as my story is, I walk into other rooms where I'm like, oh, I'm the smallest guy and the only brown guy. Word. You know, like, I was in a committee in February in coffee, and I was the only brown person there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I see a white face, and I'm like, wow, you know, for as progressive as we are, we still are not in the right places. You know, yeah. And for me, that's like when I look at a website of a company and I see who runs it, it's like, I want to see more of your face. I want to see more of my face.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see more people that truly represent the countries that this coffee that we enjoy come from.
Yeah. You know,
we're so underrepresented, whether it's in the industry, in SCA, in competition, in all of these platforms.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Everybody is celebrated but us.
Yeah.
You know, we have people that have made a life choice or grew up, they have very outside of their margins, preferences in dress or in whatever. And all of a sudden, the light that should be maybe for a Colombian competitor that is serving a Colombian coffee is completely removed. Mm. It's like, cool. So we're back in the line again? All right, cool. Just checking.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not going to change until we speak up.
Yeah.
It's not going to change until we feel comfortable enough to speak up, you know, where we own our skin and no longer just kind of like make waves to fit in,
mm-hmm.
but make waves to start creating shit and start creating and start asking for the respect that we deserve, you know.
Yeah.
People shouldn't wait until we're business owners to hear from us.
Mm-hmm.
People should hear from us, you know, from as young as did Lund's young lady back there.
Yeah.
Like, her opinions, her views are just as important as not their opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not until, like, we really start celebrating each other and really thrusting ourselves forward. No one's going to do it for us.
Yeah.
No one's going to do it for us. You know, and you know, we're expected to work hard, but we're also expected to keep quiet. You know, and that's not cool.
That's not.
You know, that's censorship in the most in the most divisive way possible.
Yeah, and I think that's what Michelle Johnson. I just shouted her out earlier. Mm-hmm. I think she's, at least in the African American culture, she's a really great example of what I think needs to start happening as well in the Latinx culture. You know, where there is that Latina or that Latino or Latinx individual stepping up into these competitions, stepping up into these platforms, into these committees. Because I remember, and I always use this example, but I remember going to Expo last year in Boston, and it was my first Expo. And so I was really excited, and I went by myself, and I'm like, all right, I don't know what to expect. And I just remember walking around, and I'm dressed in business attire, and I'm like, okay, I have to dress business attire because I have to like adapt to these people, right? And that's like my mentality at first. And I was walking around drinking so much coffee and making great connections, like making networking like crazy with people. It went really awesome, you know. Following day, I was definitely feeling the crash of the coffee, and so I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna wear like my comfortable clothes, which is like jeans, t-shirt, Converse, like super classic. Like that's, I love that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Went out, excited to network a little bit more. It decreased so much because of the way I looked, the way I was trying to connect with people. And I was just like, man, even with my Latinx individuals that I would like I went to one of the booths, and I think it was a Guatemalan booth. They were like, they would look at me like the pie cabeza, and it's like straight up like judgment. And I'm like, and I felt it. And there was like, they wouldn't give me a spot onto the table to cup. And I'm like, man, like I felt it. So it's not only is it the American, like the Caucasians, like being judgmental towards like the Latinos, the Latinx, like telling them, you know, you got to work hard, but stay quiet. It's also a lot of us doing it. You know, we're like, we have to adapt. So you can't be scandalous. You got to keep it down, you know? Yeah. And we got to break that, because I think the way, and I go always back to this episode with my Belly. She was on the episode a while back. But she talked about how, you know, we come from royalty.
Yeah.
We come from royalty. We come from empires that are still standing to this day. You know, I talk about my Mayan roots, and, you know, those, that was an empire that genius people, genius individuals. And still, like, there's still people that I know that are full on Mayans and are amazing and humble and just in so many ways. But now, because of what we're living in, it's these, like, the colonization has just separated us. Right. Because they know that us together, we would conquer everything. We would be destroying everything in the sense of, like this is ours. This is because we're claiming what's ours, right? So I really think there needs to be a collective shift, not only within ourselves, but together, I think, as a community. You know, no ver la envidia de que, ah, mira, esa ya agarró una camioneta nueva. I'm going to go get another. Nah, homie, nah. You go support your girl if she got a new truck, and don't go get yourself in debt because you want to show up her.
Exactly. No. Like, don't believe the lie. Live your life.
You know, so things like that, it's definitely, we need to be in the understanding of a collective shift altogether, whether it's in the coffee industry or outside of the coffee industry. Exactly. I think it's a thing, whatever is relatable to anybody listening or us, you know, I think whatever works is, we just need to be that collective shift.
Yes.
You know,
I agree.
But I think that's like a very strong point, that everybody needs to take. Everybody needs to take. So.
Yeah. No. And really, we should be fans of each other's ideas and really support each other, you know, especially when it's for the greater good. You know, I mean, obviously, we're going to have people's opinions and the secondary and third tier things of life. But I think for the most part, the well-being and the respect of everyone, you know, and feeling comfortable of asking for the respect that we deserve, because I think our culture puts out a lot of that. You know, I mean, even in your experience you have with producers from other countries, I know what you mean. Like, they all look like they work for Transamerica. Like, they all have their butt downs, and they're like, oh, man, you realize coffee here in the States, like, this is why actually, like, a roaster from, like, a big company is not going to take you seriously because you look like you sell insurance. And it's like, I get you. And I think that that's kind of, like, one of the things that I love going to those things, and I got a backwards cap, a t-shirt, and hat, and, like, no, yeah, I own my company, but I don't, this is just what I do. Like, I probably look like one of the baristas because I'm like, yeah. So there's no who's important and not, you know. But I feel you. I mean, I remember my first experience in SCA Boston was last year. The year before that was Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I was working the San Remo booth, and I was I was explaining to this coffee owner in Argentina about the machine and just breaking down, like, you know, all the ins and outs, the bells and whistles of the machine in perfect Spanish. And then Carlo, their marketing director, was like, hey, how old are you? And I was like, oh, at that time it was like 36, 37. Like 37, he's like, oh my God, man, this whole time I thought you were like in your 20s and I never took you serious. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm a backwards cap, probably smelling like weed, and I'm like, but yeah, I'm a nerd of this. I'm just so in my own thing that I'm not gonna dress up to impress anyone. Like, I'm too busy. If you're not impressed, don't worry about it. There's a line out the door that needs messed up, so I ain't tripping. You know,
yeah.
So I think it's once we feel comfortable in our own success, you know, that we can just feel comfortable in who we are. And this is what we are. This is it. You know, and really, and I think that. Culturally, we're always going to feel judged by our own people back home. You know,
yeah. Sure.
Even our producer Daniela struggles with that. Like, she's the farmer that's got the Cardi B nails, and she's all tatted up, and she encounters that time after time. She's part of the committee. I think it's called the CCF, the Colombian Coffee Federation.
Uh-huh.
And you know, she's only 30, and she walks in and she's like. People don't take me seriously. I'm like, well, I mean, that's fair. But she's a nerd, and she's serious about what she does. And the minute people hear her talk, they're like, oh,
yeah.
And she almost gets a kick out of seeing like those barriers that people put up real quick just crumble down. And I think that if anything, I would say own your expertise. You know, be on your game. You know, as far as like. When you get that opportunity to speak and to drop some knowledge, be ready for that, because then you'll people be like, oh, dang. It's like, yeah, you slept on us, you know, mm-hmm. but you forgot. We're hard workers. You know, this is what we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, keep at it. You know, yeah. Keep at it.
That's awesome. Well, I don't have any more questions. I'm sure I'll think about more later because I always have. Yeah.
I do want to ask, like, Where is it that you see your company going now? You and, like, knowing after everything that you saw with how adaptable your team is and how your team is actually starting to grow together even more deeply, where do you see your company going now?
I think that we're probably going to be closer to, like, the dream grocery that we have in mind sooner than not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that our focus will still be serving coffee and sourcing. But I really kind of envision a roastery that's still a little different than kind of what people are used to now. I mean, from aside from being a full on facility, but it really kind of creating a little bit more of a brewery experience when it comes to coffee, you know, where it's like, it's fun, you know, it's good. We don't take it serious, but more of like an area that can be close to like the low-income neighborhood, so that it can be a resource to the community. I think that as when we look back at the history of coffee and the things that coffee has survived, there was a time that the Catholic Church wanted to make coffee illegal because it was keeping people out of church. You know, there was a time that coffee was demonized and called the Muslim drug. And so, you know, even the name Intelligentsia was the name of the first society that created a shift at the Boston Tea Party, you know, and so it was this underground society of like-minded individuals that didn't feel that the way the States was being colonized was the right way, and so they came together, and they had the green coffee, coffee's a catalyst, you know. And so I think when we focus on the catalyst more, I think we will get better results overall, not only just as a business, but the people that are part of the business and people that get to experience the business. And so for me, I see that a dream facility of a place where, you know, there may be a degree of people that come in there and they're not even customers. They're not even consumers of us. They're just being able to learn or grow through that space. And that's what ultimately I see. We've ran numbers. We know how much coffee we need to sell per week to make this place happen. It's a pretty feasible number. And so, you know, that's the goal, you know. And I think that if we had that intention when we opened Good People 2 years ago, and we saw our little 300 square foot facility as a canvas that the community was going to transform, and they did, you know, and it was really in just us, you know, not wanting to dictate like an aesthetic or a vibe or anything like that, but really just like, how can I serve you? You know, mm-hmm. What can I make for you?
Yeah.
And I think that we can definitely do that in the model of the roastery, and be a roastery that can stand out, not necessarily for being the most, you know, Instagrammable or the most photogenic, but if it can be a place where people feel at home and it can be transformational for whatever, at whatever capacity that looks like, that that's what we want, you know. Yeah. And I think we can obtain it. You know, it's not difficult, you know. Good coffee sells itself, so
yeah.
That's true.
That's true. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. Melanie, do you have any
questions?
Chuck, do you have any last questions or comments you wanna? Or Carlos, I'm gonna call you Carlos now every time I see you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Not just thank you guys for creating platforms, you know. Especially in a time right now, you know, you don't know who's gonna listen, you know, you don't know who needs to listen. So you guys being able to create the platform of going through the trouble of uploading this, editing, you know, blasting it, you know, keeping up on all that stuff. Like it's hard work, you know. A lot of times people say, I wanna start a podcast, but you know, taking the time and being and keeping up with the consistency is very taxing. And so thank you guys for spending that time. I'm sure, you know, this is definitely a passion of love, and probably, you know, any money that can go towards hobbies is probably going to this, you know? So if anything, you know, if there's anything we can help you guys with, please let us know. Like, one of the things that in the season of COVID, we've actually been blessed to be able to help other businesses.
Nice. Time,
you know, from either donating to other shops, GoFundMes, to being able to support different baristas in different areas, because we got taken care of. So it's like, the only way this keeps happening is if you have to keep it up, keep pushing forward. So thank you for the platform, and then let us know if there's anything we can help you guys with, because again, the only way we're going to get ahead is if we're willing to help each other out. You know?
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, we think we need a lot to be generous. We don't. We just need to have enough to share.
For sure.
So that's I think the key to generosity. So, so you know, if anything we can help you guys out, like please, you know, I'm not saying this just as a gesture or like, oh my God, some people can hear and say that. Like, no, call me out on that shit. Send me a DM. Tell me what you need. You know, we'll figure it out. You know,
yeah, for sure.
I greatly appreciate that.
Thank you. Well, appreciated that, you know, you're able to like sit down and chat with us. Like, I mean, I was definitely always looking forward to like having it at your shop and like talking face to face. Right. But, you know, it'll happen for sure.
Yeah. Sooner than later, we'll be able to figure this out. You know, and you know, I think even some of the early phases that we're going to expect to see is that possibly within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we'll be able to kind of gather within folks that we already know, people are either aren't asymptomatic or have already had at least an antibiotic test to find out, you know, where their antibodies are at, you know. And I think this is a very serious thing, but I think thankfully our age group is at the more fortunate side of it, you know. And I think that is definitely the time to think about, you know, our older folks, people with respiratory issues, and really trying to make sure that we don't needlessly, you know, lose some folks that we don't need to, especially right now. Like, I was trying to tell my dad, I'm like, do you realize he's out and about doing all of life in 7 years. Do you realize how much of a bummer it would be if you get sick and I can't see you in the hospital? Like, come on, Dad. You know, Hispanic dads, they're going to do what they're going to do. They're like, I've beat so much in these 7 years, I'm going to keep eating everything. I'm like,
He's like, tengo que trabajar.
I was like, I, that, that's that's what I do command about white folks. They really know how to tell their parents what to do and sit them down. Like, good luck telling a Hispanic parent mm-hmm. what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my mom's the same way, man. She's in Utah, and man, I'm like eager to go see her, but she's 55, I believe. How old is your mom?
53.
I think she's turning 53.
So my mom's like 54, and man, she's, and the little town that she lives in is like small. It's small, right? And so she rides her bike everywhere. She doesn't want to drive, and she'll ride her bike, still go to work, and she got a second job because the hours got cut from one, and I'm like, Mom, why are you going out? Like, are you wearing your mask? I'm going to buy you some sanitizer. I'm going to buy you some gloves. She's like, I'm just bored. And I'm like, okay, just chill. Like, but you can't tell. You can't tell a Latina mom to be like, just chill. No.
No days off.
Well, all right. Well, we really appreciate it once again. And hopefully sometime this coming time, I don't know, we'll meet face to face, you know, we'll make it happen. And yeah, so thank you once again. We appreciate the conversation. It was great.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if you need anything from us as well, you know,
let us know.
Let us know. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Actually, no, we're gonna hit you guys up. We're putting together little packages, so that y'all can do some giveaways since we did some fun social distancing.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be good.
Branded mugs and shirts and stuff like that. So we want to put together some little prizes so that y'all can do like giveaways. And stuff
for
like
sure.
That.
Yeah.
Never know how to do an Instagram giveaway.
I know, right? They're so confusing. You can do so many things with this.
So I'm hoping to like connect with people and know how to do giveaways. So I'm like, here, I'll give you the stuff. You just do whatever.
Yeah, our social media director back here will definitely figure it out.
Yeah, I'm excited. It actually be our first giveaway.
Yeah, first one. Well, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because we do a lot of fundraising, but we never do giveaways. So
you know what? You know what's gonna be fun? This one. Our designer, Karina, she redid. Redid
this. Oh, that's cool.
But the skeleton, if you notice, la cara tiene día los muertos.
Sí, yeah. Sí, yeah.
And so, and then a joint, of course. Sorry. Yes. So it definitely has our vibe, and we always try to sneak in a little bit of that cultural vibe into what we do. You know, so that was how we were sneaking it in into this season. So we'll do a little social distancing care package so that y'all can give it away.
Yeah, for sure. We're definitely down.
We'll send some followers your way.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thank you once again, and stay safe. So.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, totally. Se me cuidan, por favor.
Igual.
Claro.
Adiós, Wolf. Va, pues.
Vámonos.